again, a shout out to Elena Ong for inviting me to this session. I guess I can ask this question now. I'm a survey researcher. Who thinks income inequality makes us sick? Of course. The answer is probably, but let's take a look. I have no relationships to disclose that are relevant to this presentation. I'm going to touch on two things in this 14 minutes that I have here, explaining the link between income inequality and health, and then really quickly about redistribution policies and social policies and how these could reduce income inequality and ultimately benefit health. This is the cover of Oxfam's report, Even It Up. Just came out in October 2014. These two gentlemen are business travelers. Of course, they're business travelers worlds apart, so it's a stark view of the divide, income inequality across continents. But as we know in our work here as public health advocates and champions, that income inequalities are not just across continents, but also within counties, within cities, across neighborhoods that could just be next door to each other. However, the divides in socioeconomics is greatest between countries. So if we use the Gini coefficient, which I'll explain in a second, that the higher it is, the more unequal the society is. And the world income inequality is the highest. It's much higher than within countries. And here are three examples, USA, Brazil, and Sweden. The Gini coefficient, which I'll talk about here in another slide, is one measure of income inequality. It's not, it's about distribution. It's about distribution of resources, distribution of income within a society. So it's from 0 to 1, or sometimes you'll see it 0 to 100. And the easiest way to think about it is one person or has all the concentration of income in that area. And 0 would be that it's the most equal. So 1 is more unequal, 0 is the most unequal. And there are no countries that are at 0, no countries that are at 1. But USA is about at 0.4 and 0.5. Brazil has been going down through the years, but it's still at a high income inequality. And as you would suspect, the countries of Sweden, Norway, Finland have the lower income inequality. The greatest inequality, as I said, is across countries in the world rather than within countries. Here's how a map of inequality looks in the U.S. And the darker the shade, the more unequal. The darkest shades are between 0.46 to about 0.64, and they tend to be in the northeast corridor going down, a bit in the south here. So coastal areas, we see it in Texas. We see dark spots across counties within states using the Gini index. This is where I'm from, Los Angeles. Kind of dark there too. And then less unequal places in the Midwest, in Nevada, Utah. There. Using the Equality Trust look at associations between income inequality and health, Dr. Braidman's already said that we're ranked bottom in infant mortality, but let's look at one factor, income inequality. And it does show that there is this association of greater inequality and greater higher infant mortality, and I have the U.S. here in a red circle. U.S. is actually even off the map of this regression line, so it's slightly higher here. In looking at life expectancy, where going down is also not a good thing because the more unequal the country, then the lower the life expectancy. And Japan is up here and off the regression line. US is close, but also again, not where we really want to be at this point. Using this index of health and social problems, so it's not just about life expectancy and infant mortality, but let's throw in the mix, because we want to get about wellness, math proficiency and literacy, homicides, imprisonment, teenage births, obesity, mental illness, including drug and alcohol addiction, and then also adding some assets, trust, and social mobility. So in this 10 indicator index, again, we see the index of health and social problems are much higher for us, and then again, mapping it to income inequality, the U.S. is the worst here in this picture. So can we be cheerful in trying to get at being the healthiest nation? Well, before I go there, so I'm a health economist, and the evidence is mixed, so we're not, you know, there is this association between inequality and health, but there's some measurement problems with this. One of the measurement problems, which I think is actually not a measurement problem, is this notion of this reverse causality problem. Is it that inequality makes us sicker, but on the other hand, a healthier nation that could actually possibly get, lower inequality. In this case, I think it's more of a vicious cycle. I think it's this vicious cycle and not an empirical problem, but a vicious cycle that needs to be addressed through interventions, social and health interventions. The other measurement problem is that, as Dr. Braverman said, it's multifactorial. It's not just about income inequality. There's lots of other factors, and part of those factors are interventions. It's government policies that try to redistribute income, and if those the government policies need to be accounted for. It's also the social welfare policies that are present side by side with health policies, and again, those vary by different countries. So I turn to then a recent IMF report by Austria on answering the question, well, if you really believe in this trickle-down theory, the trickle-down theory of that you do need to have income inequality, you do need to have a kind of an engine of growth among the top earners to make sure that there's economic growth. Well, this recent study by an IMF economist shows that it actually is not necessary for economic growth. So, and this conceptual model that they use is that you talk about the Gini coefficient, which I discussed earlier, but you also, it's not market inequality, but you need to also look at net inequality in a nation. What I showed you were growth indicators of the Gini, and the net inequality accounts for this redistribution, this government will, this redistribution through cash transfers, through wage policies, minimum wage policies, through progressive taxes that get at net income inequality. And so in this conceptual framework, the takeaways are that if a society is unequal, there is government will. I mean, those who are in power do tend to redistribute more. So there is this will to redistribute, so that's a good thing. But this lower net inequality is the inequality minus the cash transfers, minus the government interventions. It does seem to drive growth faster. So not only, is it that there's no association, but if you think about net inequality, that it does seem to drive durable growth faster. But redistribution, though, appears to be benign in its impact on growth. And then we turn to then the social investments, another unmeasured variable that's important to look at side by side with looking at income inequality, and work by Betsy Bradley and Taylor, that this policies that are local, national, can reduce income inequality and improve health. Looking at social sector investments at times may even have more of a bang, more of an impact in improving health than investments in the health sector. And these social services sectors could be rent subsidies, employment training programs, unemployment benefits, old age pensions, family support, other services that can extend and improve life. How does the U.S. compare to countries that are similar to the U.S. economically, like the OECD countries? In OECD, on average, every dollar spent on health care is about $2 is spent on social services. In the U.S., for every dollar spent on health care, only about 55 cents is spent on social services. And this slide reiterates this point, where this is up here is two, so this is most of the OECD countries are at two times. And here is that 55 cents. So again, any success stories? Well, Brazil. Brazil is has been experiencing rapid growth, and then the question is this rapid growth leading to reducing income inequality? And it appears that there is a sliding down of income inequality, though still high through the years. How did they do it? A study by Acevedo shows that this decline and Barros, particularly in Brazil, is that perhaps this Bolsa Família, this conditional cash transfer program, was estimated to account for 15 to 20% of the drop in income inequality in Brazil. So it's some part. It's not a major part, but it certainly was a consequential part. And of course, it's about rising wages among the poor, and that was the main driver. So it's change in the labor market. So change in labor income accounted for the majority of this drop in income inequality. So how do we get then from, again, this is looking at, I graphed a table from Avendano's article in Social Science and Medicine 2012. So infant mortality is on the vertical axis, and net income Gini, again, this is what we really should look at, is net income Gini. This subtracts out the government programs. We're still high, USA, but then how do we get, so Brazil's was 0.6 to 0.55, and that's like a 5-point difference, 5 percentage points difference. And we can't expect to go from here to here. So I think that's we in by 2030. I think it's impossible. I can be certain it's going to be impossible between to go from here to here. Maybe we can go from here to here, but you know, Finland is a very different society and very different demographic composition than the United States. Maybe we can go from here to here if we think UK is the most similar across these countries in terms of the diversity of the population, that this is possible. So my conclusion and an appeal, and I'm sure this appeal will continue with the rest of the panelists, is that although income inequality is not the magic bullet, it is important to become a healthier nation. And it can't happen unless the governments and counties address income inequality. There's evidence that redistribution policies do not make economies sick, and that progressive and tax wage policies and social policies could be the prescription. However, it requires political will, and it has to be powered by social movements. And so I turn to the next panelist to talk about social movements. Thank you.